Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Rebel Radio Podcasts. We survived Comic Palooza 2021. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the clerk.
The clerk.
That actually makes sense since, you know, we all work in retail.
But yes.
But yes.
I work in distribution.
Well, distribution to retail, bitch. Same thing.
Yeah.
You used to merchandise in retail, so it all counts. We're all part of the same retail family of things.
We've all been there.
I pretty much hate vendors, so, you know. I've been taught that and brainwashed that to hate vendors.
Damn French people brainwashing you.
But yeah, it's the week after Comic Palooza 2021, which we... You know, it didn't even occur to me. We threw together a show, not necessarily our regular format. And I will check the audio this week, and if it comes out good, I'll put it out as a special episode next week. We had not recorded in person in just over a year until last Sunday. And it even occurred to me when we were doing it. Like, hey, this is the first time the three of us have recorded in the same room. In over a year. And I guess it's just a test of us being very natural with each other and kind of used to it. But it was cool. And I'm hoping in a couple weeks for my birthday movie, I haven't thrown this at you guys yet, but I'm hoping maybe we can get together and do that episode in person if you guys would like. I would appreciate it. You know, so we'll see.
We'll make a thing of it. We'll have pizza.
When's your birthday?
The 8th. So we got to record that Friday the 6th. Because I'm going to be probably in Galveston that Saturday the 7th. But,
look at that. He's going to a foreign land. He's traveling so far Galveston for his birthday.
But, I don't want to talk about that yet. I don't really like the fact that I'm getting older, even though I know it happened.
Do you have Jesus's phone number?
What?
1-800-JESUS? But, ultimately I wasn't sure what to think of the con this year. You know, we're still in a COVID world and things are on one way they're looking up and other ways it looks like they're not looking up. It's hard to say, but I don't want to get into all that.
You're unvaxxed, fools.
Well, yeah, now they're saying if you have the one shot, you might get another one. So, you know, which is me, I might have to get another shot, but that's fine, whatever. But at the same time, it felt natural. Like, it felt nice to see some friends I hadn't seen in a couple of years and the podcast table and Ming Chen from Comic Book Men and I Sell Comics was there, and Long had some fun calling him out. And he was a good sport about it when I talked to him afterwards. And he was just like, I didn't really know what was going on. But I told him about our friendly feud that Long has created with him, even though Ming doesn't know the feud exists, about Long being jealous that he's a famous Asian and Long's not. but me had a good laugh about it. He's always a good sport. Just walking around the con and seeing people, you know, have a sense of being normal and being happy. And I think it was good. It was fun. I was kind of glad it was only 2 days instead of three. But at the same time, Sunday seemed really short for me because we did our show. And then I was on Craig Price's cast off of Matinee Heroes at 3:30 that day, and I got beat by our friend Erica. I sucked. But that's okay. Yeah, it was horrible. I felt ashamed. I walked away with just shameful, but whatever. Fuck it. So it was a good time. It seemed like people were having a good time. Everything I've read online, it seemed like the con got really good reviews. People really appreciate it. Bought some stuff. Our friends at Misfit Toys, Daniel, he pulled my hair and made me buy a Star Wars figure. No, not really. But he cut me a good deal on a Star Wars figure that he had on his wall there that I wanted. So, you know. And y'all's overall impressions of Comic Palooza this year in a post-COVID world.
I felt like...
Matt, you were there also Saturday, man.
Yeah, I feel like I didn't get to browse as much as I wanted to, but I found some cool stuff. There was some celebrities there that I thought about taking a selfie with, thought about doing the whole Cobra Kai thing, but I felt like, I don't know, you know, I felt like I wasn't really expecting to be there, so I just kind of helped out where I was needed, and I had a fun time doing our panel. It definitely felt like it went smoother than I thought it was going to go, you know, on such short notice, but I had fun. You know, had fun, found a cool T-1000 action figure, and it was a blast.
Yeah, it was really packed on Saturday. I mean, it was very busy. And it was fairly packed for most of Sunday, too. You know, and Long, you made your appearance, showed up like Superman to do this show, and then flew out of there.
Yeah. Elvis has left the building. Thank you very much.
Well, yeah. I appreciate you coming down to do the show with your bros. You know, I mean, I think the little live show we did came out pretty well, you know.
It would be so funny if the audio quality of that show turned out really good. It's like on all the previous. Yeah. And I made a mention. It's like it'll be so funny because every time we planned a live panel show, there's always something that interferes with the sound quality in some weird way. Like one year it was like the lotto thingy, the roulette wheel that was clicking, you know what?
Yeah. The very first year where we had, we were there.
The Mad that Max one Appreciation.
That one came out okay. Where we
it had turned out really good. Table. Yeah.
Yeah. Did we record that show that first year?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about the first year.
Yeah, I'm sure we did. I'm sure I got it somewhere. Yeah, because you brought your recording equipment. And then I know I borrowed your recording. The year you didn't go, I borrowed your recording equipment. That's when we had the 501st. So that one came out good. And then then the Big Trouble Little China episode and the Star Wars episode, both of those, the audio was pretty rough. But this year we did not do a movie on the show floor. We did a kind of Arnold Schwarzenegger trivia / retrospective kind of thing. No reason why, just because. And,
yeah, it was fun. Why not?
Something different. You know, sometimes I really do like talking a featured movie every week because it gives the show a focus. But I sometimes miss the old format where we were just a little more random for, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. You know, talking about, we would have bullet points back then, but we were more random just talking about different things in pop culture. And so sometimes I miss that format a little bit, you know. But I've also tried to do that with the intro of the show or the top fives. It gives us those areas to open up the show more to other discussion besides just the movie. And the same with the news at the end of the show, which by the time we get to that, you guys are usually about tired and y'all usually don't say much about the news. But that's what that's what those parts of the show are for, though, is to have that freedom and open format. You know, because I do kind of miss that sometimes. But I also like to have a focus on the show, too. So, as you know, we talked about back in the day, Matt, that's the reason we reformatted the show, because we felt it was getting to the point where, you know, we needed a better focus for the show. And that's why we did it that way. But it was fun just doing kind of a random show at Compalooza as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it seemed like the audience had a little bit of fun, too.
Yeah, man, we had that one guy that sat there and answered some questions. He seemed to be a pretty hardcore Arnold guy like you. And, of course, Justin came up and answered a few, and it was fun. You know, we had a few people stopping by and listening for a few minutes, and, you know, which is not always easy for me to do. I'm pretty damn introverted. It's hard for me to talk in front of people. I'm not like Long where I can just grab a mic and go off like, you know, DJ Styles or something, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But, For me, it's a little harder to do that. I have to kind of get in the zone, and I look down at the table a lot. I hardly ever look at the audience. That's just me. It's like, people are looking at me. And then they tell you to try to picture them naked, but then you look at some people in the audience, you're like, oh, I don't want to picture them naked.
You're like, no, bad idea.
Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, I got to call out Ming Chen finally.
Yeah. Yeah, that was funny, man. Like I said, I went and talked to him about it later, and he was a good sport. You know, I talked to him briefly about like, man, you gotta come on a show, man. You gotta podcast with us. And he's like, He's like, definitely, man. He liked to do it, but he'd really like to do it. He told me, he goes, I'd like to do it in person when I'm in town, you know, come by Coral Sword or something and do a show. But who knows? Maybe it'll happen one day. He's been on the show a few times. It's like an interviewee type stuff, but it'd be cool to sit down and actually record with him. And got to appreciate his support for local podcasters, because here's a guy who's, kind of had a 15 minutes of fame with the comic book men, but he continues just to support local podcasters. And his love for Comicpalooza is genuine. He has family from Houston, so he really does love coming here and supporting this. And he supports a lot of the cons he goes to, but he really, really likes Houston and coming to the show, and the fact that the fellow podcasters have embraced him in the community we have. Because he's told me, he goes, a lot of cons he goes to don't have podcast programs and stuff like we do at Comicpalooza. So I think he really appreciates that. So I think it's pretty cool. And we'll see what happens next year in 2022, with the podcast pavilion. I know they had big plans last year and this year for it, but they scaled it down, for the podcast. But we still got to do our shows.
So have a good freestyle 45 minute talk with Ming, you know?
Right. Yeah. Just something like that would be cool. You know, there's talks next year about having the podcasters be able to kind of buy tables, sort of like fan tables, which would be cool, because you could maybe like record two or three shows throughout the weekend of just different stuff you see going on. You can sit down at your own table and do it, you know, if you bring your equipment. That might be a good idea too, you know. We'll see what they pull out. But, it's I'm pretty cool. They have. I agree. When we were talking about the podcast, tables last year, that actually came up. Everyone was like, man, the team I'm on, we're like, you can't really charge these guys. They're not making any money. And everyone kind of agreed with that. But the con's not going to give them to them for free either. But, $50 maybe. But you can't go charge podcasters, the price you charge fan tables, a couple $100 and all that. No one's going to pay for it. You're not going to be able to sell those tables,
Exactly.
So it'll be interesting to see how that works, But that's next year. But before we get into download this, any final thoughts? Comicpalooza 21. I don't want to spend too much time on it. We were there. We lived
there. No, it was fun. And hopefully a more expansive deal next year.
I think the biggest thing for me was I went and saw Empire Strikes Back on the big screen last in the fall, and I've gone and done a couple of things, but this is the first real normal kind of thing I've done in a year, I think, for a lot of us, we went and had dinner and, things like that with friends, but a big event, this was the first thing. And I think that's what I took away from it. It gave a sense of normalcy, even though things aren't quite as normal as we want them to be yet. But hopefully soon. But let's get into download this then, where we tell people what we watched, streamed, checked out this week. I will go first for once, because I came home today and I binge watched all 5 episodes of Masters of the Universe Revelation. And I liked it. It's really well animated. There's some nice, lots of cool cameos. The cool thing about He-Man Masters of the Universe, there were all these toys that were never in the show, or they might have been in the background. You're like, man, this is cool, but you never see them in the show. Man, Kevin Smith and his team, it's ironic this came out today on the day we're doing a Kevin Smith movie. They utilize those characters. They make some of these toys that look so freaking badass, and they put them in the show. You're like, that's awesome to see them in action. Really good voice work, even though Mark Hamill sounds a little too much Joker-ish. I was kind of hoping he'd give his own spin on Skeletor. But it's extremely
I forgot well, what it's, Skeletor sounds like.
Yeah, so. It's a cool story. Well, I mean, he sounds kind of like, it was Alan Oppenheimer did the original, so it kind of just sounds like a Megatron-ish type evil, but I just was hoping Hamill wouldn't sound so much Joker like on it. But overall, yeah. I like it. It's got some great twists in it. The cliffhanger will have you pissed off and waiting till the second part, because it's going to be a 2-part first season. You can watch the whole thing in a little over 2 hours. There's only 25 minutes each episode. But I recommend it. I really enjoyed the new Masters of the Universe from Kevin Smith and his team, and I look forward to more. And it definitely does carry on in the legacy of the original show, but yet definitely modernized it a little darker, a little bit more. I want to say, I don't know if it's more adult, but just, not quite as silly as the original show. So definitely watch that. Hit Netflix today. I recommend that. And then I also checked out Disney on Disney Plus has a new series called Behind the Attraction, where they go behind the scenes at our different rides and stuff. And I watched the Star Tours episode, you know, going behind how they
got the I can't wait for the Haunted Mansion one.
I think it's on there too already. I think. Yeah. And it's a really cool series, man. Disney has been A+ with their documentaries on Disney Plus for the most part. And it was cool to see how, like, they wanted Star Wars there, but, like, they basically created all that technology for Star Tours just like they did for Galaxy's Edge. And it was pretty neat to see the ideas they came up with.
But Imagineers, man. Yeah. They work miracles.
Some incredible stuff they do, man. And it's pretty neat. And there's some really interesting footage in there of George Lucas without a beard when he was very young. And they, even I, as a Star Wars fan, I had never seen before. And I was like, wow, that's really strange. So I don't know where Disney pulled that stuff out of for this documentary, but it's kind of cool. So despite my very busy week, I did have time to come home today, watch Masters of the Universe, and get that episode of Disney Attractions watched.
Still waiting. Yep. And then we'll still wait for your Loki update, too.
Eventually, yeah.
For me, I'll go next. I restarted my account with Final Fantasy 14 online.
Nice.
And started playing that. And I've been enjoying it. And I finally got to level 50, and they gave me a free samurai job. And my character looks so fucking badass with a katana and doing all these really cool moves and stuff. And then I got a red mage, and like I try to play it, and I'm like, I don't get it, whatever. But the samurai was so cool.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, and I didn't get to watch anything. It was such a crazy week. Except for my weekly anime episodes. That's about it. But other than that, I've been playing Final Fantasy 14. Huh?
Your tentacle porn.
Say what? Yeah, whatever.
Tentacle porn.
Yeah, whatever. Don't judge. I showed you what I considered is peak.
Well, you know, when we
a gentleman's material.
Well, you know, I've been looking at the docket for August and September, and I've been thinking about throwing Ninja Scroll in there. You know, we got to bring Raw back on the show for Ninja Scroll.
Hell
since
yeah!
Since he threw out the shout out to it on the Saving Private Ryan episode, talking about tentacle porn.
You know, the same director who did Ninja Scroll also did Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust. Oh my God! It's the director of that. You know, the two movies. He definitely reached the zenith of his creative powers in Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust. I actually bought it on Blu-ray. So, yeah, I highly recommend it. Fantastic art style. It's all hand drawn, mostly. And great story too. Oh. But anyhow.
Nice.
What about you, Matt?
So I wanted to watch I saw that they, I guess because they announced, you know, Clerks 3 filming, there was plenty of Kevin Smith movies on sale on Vudu, so I picked up Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. I always think that Will Ferrell is funny in that movie. You've got Eliza Dushku, Shannon Elizabeth, and that one girl that was also in Bring It On. I forget her name. I think she went on to star in Grey's Anatomy or something. But laughed at that. I went ahead and bought the movie. That
it's a solid movie.
Went ahead and bought the movie we're watching today too, and then I got Chasing Amy, and I watched Chasing Amy just so I could, because I had seen it, but it's been a while. Like these are movies that, you know, sometimes I've only seen once or maybe twice, but it's like Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back held up for me. I genuinely thought it was funny. It's probably one of my favorite movies in the universe of Kevin Smith movies. But other than that, I watched Kindergarten Cop, since we did the Arnold panel. I went ahead and watched that, and that's about it. It's a few movies. Yeah.
What'd you think of Chasing Amy? You kind of trailed off there.
Yeah, it was definitely felt like a chick flick. You know.
Oh yeah.
Definitely chick flickish. I mean, you've got Brody in there, so he keeps the comedy going, and makes it more of a Kevin Smith film. Yeah, the finger cuffs, you know, that part was pretty funny.
Yeah. he's not Brody in that movie, though.
Yeah, he's what Banky. Is he in that movie? Banky. Yeah.
Banky.
I haven't seen Jason Lee in anything lately. He's just living off that, TV royalties, I guess.
Yeah.
TV show he did.
My Name is Earl.
Yeah,
but yeah. You know, filming television can burn out an actor, though, because you're on the set like at least 12 hours every weekday, mm-hmm. and it could be taxing. So that can really burn someone out. There's been a lot of actors who are famous on TV shows, and sometimes you don't see them come back for even movies because television schedule's brutal and. They have to sacrifice so much time of their own personal time to do television shows.
Right.
You know? And, yeah. Like that's Dean why King. We probably don't see Jason Lee very much lately.
Yeah. You know, he was also a professional skateboarder at one time, too.
Yeah.
Before he started acting. So.
Huh. I've seen some viral videos of him still, kick-flipping boards and stuff, even, like,
in recent years. So Voodoo had a athlete from athletic to movie sale or something, and Mallrats was on there, and I was like, "Who is an athlete in Mallrats?" But I guess the pro skateboarding stuff translates into that, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
I almost bought Mallrats, but they wanted like $7.99 for each movie. And I was like, if it was $5, I'd buy two or three, but I won't buy.
Did you get Dogma?
I didn't look for Dogma. That's a good one. That was the first Kevin Smith movie I ever saw, Dogma.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was funny.
Kevin Smith really pushed the envelope on that one. And that's a really good one.
I like the story of how he he joined the protesters that were protesting Dogma. And the guy was interviewing him, and he's like, yeah, he's like, he wrote it. He talks about how he wrote a sign that said Dogma is dog shit. And, and he brought his sign up there, and they're like, he's like, oh, what do you think about Kevin Smith? I'm like, oh, he sucks. And then the guy that was filming was like, hey, you're Kevin Smith. And he's like, no. He's like, yeah, dude, you look like him. No, dude. He has a beard. I have a beard. we're two different people. And then he's like, can I see your ID? And he borrowed his friend's ID. Yeah, this is me. But he thought it was funny. Even the reporter was like,
Right.
But yeah,
Kevin Smith does have the look of a generic white guy look, I guess.
Well, yeah.
and before we start today's feature film, he is one of the most down to earth celebrities in the world. I mean, he Stan Lee told him one time to never forget the people that made you who you are and to stop and say hi to every one of them.
Good advice.
And Kevin has lived by that. He will talk to anybody. He's never too busy to say hi to someone, and he's truly genuine. He talks people in the eyes when he talks to them. He listens to them. He's never too busy to move to the next person. he's talked about it before, how his agents have told him, like, okay, you have to leave now, and he doesn't want to leave because he said he'll talk to me forever. And sometimes I know celebrities, they come across as, fake or not real, but Kevin truly is just one of those genuine guys in Hollywood that's not too big for who he is. And I think that's, before we get into today's film, I think that's why our generation has embraced him so much. I mean, he truly feels like one of us. I mean, what he's from his Star Wars references to his comic references to his friendship with Stan Lee and his in podcasting and everything he's done. I think that's why we've all related to him so well, because he really feels like our next door neighbor. And you don't get that
with the voice of Gen X, man.
You don't get that with most celebrities, and you truly get that with Kevin. I mean, he's active on social media.
And Christian Slater.
He's retweeted me before. He's responded to something I said. I mean, Kevin truly is out there amongst his fans, and I think it's cool that he's done that. And it's cool that he made a little black and white film back in 1994 that won some awards at Sundance and got his start, and that was Clerks. And then in 2006, he was able to finally make the sequel to Clerks, and that is Clerks 2, which is today's film, celebrating its 15th anniversary. And I guess I can summarize. I haven't summarized in a few weeks. Basically, it's a continuation of the story of Dante and Randall, who worked in the Quick Stop and RST video stores. And when the video store burns down, their life has to, and the Quick Stop burns down as well, they have to look for a new job, and they end up working at a fast food joint. So it's basically a tale of these two guys and where their life is in their 30s instead of as teenagers. And they realize in some ways that life is kind of passing them by as they go along. But they also realize at the end of it that, you know, it's not always about what you've accomplished job-wise in your life, but sometimes it's the friendships and the people that you meet throughout it. And Clerks 2 is a very funny and very vulgar movie at times, but it's also a little bit heartwarming, too, is the story of these two guys. Of course, the usual Jay and Silent Bob make their appearance in this film, too. And the only reason Jay is even in this film is because he promised Kevin he would stay off drugs, and he did it, and he was able to be cast in the film. Hard to think that Kevin Smith was seriously considering casting someone else as Jay because his buddy couldn't stay clean, but he cleaned himself up. But that's basically the story of Clerks 2, a movie that I saw in theaters. This might be, you know, we were talking a little bit there about some of our favorite View Askew movies, which is not our top five, but this might be one of my favorite View Askew films. I really think Clerks 2 is, and Clerks is great, and Chasing Amy is great, but something about Clerks 2 just, I think it's because of some of the things I said. It's extremely funny, but it's also extremely heartwarming, too. And I think working in retail and the industry's working, you can relate to this movie in a lot of ways.
That
makes sense. I mean, just from dealing with customers, the conversations you have with your friends, to knowing that you can trust your work friends and things like that, there's just a lot to relate to in this movie. And just this movie truly had me belly laughing the first time I saw it. There's some really funny stuff that we'll get to in a minute. Matt, you had seen Clerks 2 before this week, right?
Yes. Yeah. But I was like, I had to make Jackie watch it, and I had to make sure she saw the donkey scene, and she was just like, ah, oh, what the?
to me, that's not even the funniest scene in the movie.
No, it's it's in the top two or three, probably.
But Pussy Troll is the funniest scene in the movie.
Pussy Troll.
I mean, that's just Randall's face is just his. What's his name? Anderson.
Anderson. I can't
remember the actor's name. He sells that scene so much. it's hilarious. Long, you had seen Clerks 2, right?
Yes, I was a big fan of the original Clerks. Yeah. Especially when I worked in, I ever tell you what my first job was ever?
You worked in video store, didn't you?
I worked at Blockbuster Video.
Oh, yeah.
Pre-DVD days, too. So I was one of those guys who knew how to handle like 20 cassette tapes in one go and start putting them up, you know? And, I related.
Did you get annoyed when like a teenager like me, and I'm looking over there and I see you putting videos back, and I can see that brand new copy of like, I don't know, Transformers movie, and I ask you for it? Did you get annoyed when people did that?
No, it never happens to me. Yeah, luckily.
I used to always stand up there and see what people were returning.
Dude, I get annoyed when parents rent R-rated movies to kids that they shouldn't be watching, you know? That's the one thing I do get annoyed of. That
kind of shit.
Yeah. But yeah, man. Yeah, Clerks 2 reminds me of my existential crisis. And that's still ongoing of my existential crisis. why am I existing right now? Am I just breathing air? But anyways, what was it? Tip of my tongue. But yeah, I relate to Dante and his ordeals, but I didn't whine as much as Dante did. So
yes. That's probably my biggest thing with Brian O'Halloran as an actor. Is, you know, he's one of Kevin's friends that he puts into movies, and he's not terrible, but sometimes he comes across a little whiny and the way he delivers his lines and stuff. And I've always felt that Dante I didn't always buy him as being strong enough up against Randall, if that makes sense. You know, Randall is your crude best friend that's going to tell you how it is. He's going to use terrible language and he's going to say stuff. And to me, you know, Dante, that Brian O'Halloran as an actor isn't always strong enough to me. It felt to put Randall in his place, but somehow it still works.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder. But the thing I was like watching the movie, I was a little disappointed that they were kind of taken out of the retail setting and into a fast food setting, because I personally don't have any experience with fast food. As far as working on the other side of the counter. So I couldn't really relate with the struggles. I mean, I understood it, but couldn't really vicariously live through the characters in the fast food setting. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. It seems like they could have gone from a convenience store to maybe like went to work for like a drugstore. You know, maybe a slightly bigger store maybe to carry their story forward. So yeah, that makes sense.
Or a corporate store or something.
Well, and I guess it's because at this point, Kevin had created movies in the Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back movie, so he wanted to have a reason to use it as more of a setting, you know, for the film. So I guess maybe that's why, because it's part of his universe. But yeah, no, I agree with that. So you take these guys who were used to in this setting, and then you put them in a something that's different, not quite as relatable as the Clerks film was, you know. But there are some things that relate to it, like whenever the customers that's annoying and they go and they get the flies on the meat and the ice out of the toilet and stuff like that. Because as working retailer, there's always that one customer you wish you could do that kind of stuff to.
And then they give it to friend Jay.
Well, yeah, Jay, man, this tastes like piss. And that's one thing. Jason Mewes is actually really good in this movie as Jay. And I think it's because Jay works. Like, I enjoy Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and I enjoy Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. But those characters work much better in small doses. I think we'll all agree. Like, just a little bit of Jay and a little bit of Silent Bob is just enough to make you laugh and not get to the point where you're tired of them. And I think that's why they're so good in Clerks. I laugh every time at the opening scene where it's like where they're cleaned up, like, yeah, it's the holy fucking Bible. Yeah, Jay and Silent Bob all of a sudden are Christians.
The holy fucking Bible. He's got Buddy Jesus on his shirt.
Yeah.
And reference. And Kevin has perfected Silent Bob so much that sometimes you have to take your eyes off of Jay and watch his facial expressions. They're really funny, man. Kevin does a really good job of expressing a lot just by shaking his head and looking at Jay certain ways. Especially the Buffalo Bill scene. It's just like, come on,
oh,
man.
Yeah.
And Silent Bob is looking at him like, yes, apparently he's done it to Kevin in person a few times. Those two have an interesting friendship, because I would never do Buffalo Bill to you guys.
Yeah.
No.
Heck yeah. No. Fun little fact, before he released the film, during the editing process, he showed a rough cut of this movie to Quentin Tarantino. Mm-hmm. And I forgot who else was in the room to watch it. It was Quentin Tarantino and I believe...
The book he talks about the book, I think it was Richard Dern, was at Quentin's house.
Richard who?
Dern, I think. Was that it? Oh, yeah, okay. Bruce Dern.
Yeah. Bruce Stern.
Bruce Stern.
Okay.
Bruce Stern, who was a lot of Tarantino fans. Yeah.
Yeah. And I forgot. I could have sworn it was someone else there too. It was Bryan Singer, I think, might have been in that.
I don't remember Singer being mentioned. I think it might have been Weinstein.
Yeah.
Because they were all still.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was before we knew Weinstein was a creep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I forgot what was the input. Did you hear what input Quentin gave?
Well, Kevin said he put the movie on and they here's Quentin Tarantino and Bruce Dern laughing, and Quentin turned to him and basically said, "Man, that's some funny shit. This movie's hilarious." And Kevin was like, "Man, if I can make Quentin Tarantino and Bruce Dern laugh, I must have done something right." You know, because these are two guys. You know, so yeah, and that's essentially how it went. Yeah.
But, yeah,
the movie's got a lot of elements in it. It's obviously comedy, and then but you've also got some romantic kind of chick flick theme that goes on there with Rosario and
Dante. Kevin's real life wife making out with Brian O'Halloran throughout the movie. It's like, geez,
yeah. I didn't realize that at first. I was like, she looks familiar. Who's that actor again? Wife. And I was like, oh shit, that's his wife. Oh crap! And then apparently, if Rosario wasn't able to fulfill that part, because I guess they tried a few people, it was going to be Liv Tyler, but she
and Rachel Weisz.
Yeah, Liv did not want to commit to the lines. She's like, "That's a little vulgar for me. I can't do it." And then Rachel Weisz, I guess they just couldn't lock her down. She was really hard to get a hold of.
No, they didn't bother giving it to her, but they were considering her name.
Yeah.
They didn't give her a script
because
they
knew that she would turn it down. Was offered it, but she turned it down, but said that she would play Randall.
Her and Kevin have had kind of had a feud over this after that. You know, they don't really like each other a whole lot.
Yeah.
If I remember right. But I can't imagine anybody besides Rosario Dawson as Becky, because she's so good in this movie. I mean, she's she's a little vulgar, a little sweet, a little sexy. I mean, she's excellent. I mean, she absolutely owns the part of Becky. It's good to hear that apparently she's going to come back for Clerks 3, which is amazing.
She has to. The story demands it.
Yeah, she has. She steals this film in a lot of ways from these characters that. At this point, we had already grown up watching these characters for about 12, 13 years in the other films. And then she comes in as a new character, and she's amazing in the movie.
Yeah. She also returned in the reboot, right? Jay and Silent Bob reboot?
Yeah, but it's a different part. She doesn't play Becky in it. Yeah.
I think she plays herself, right? Doesn't she play herself?
No, she's a character. Jay goes, look, you haven't watched it yet? It's on Amazon Prime. You can watch it for free.
Yeah, is that that's when he's trying to find his daughter, right?
He's trying to find Justice, and he runs into Justice and turns out she's a lesbian now. Rosario Dawson's her lover.
Yeah, that's right.
But, yeah, and then turns out that he had a daughter with Justice, yeah. So.
That's right. I had to remember.
Of course, we'll talk about Clerks 2 without talking about the rooftop scene with Becky.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Lots of bouncing.
Yeah.
You know, that scene, I mean, you know, sometimes when they do music in movies that aren't musicals, you worry how they're going to work, but that scene works really well because she's trying to teach, you know, Dante how to dance and everything for this wedding. But yeah, Becky's just so good in this movie. And then the other good is I went and looked is Jeff Anderson plays Randall. And, you know, Jeff, the reason Clerks 3 has taken so long to get made is because Jeff didn't want to play the character anymore, but they finally worked out their details and he's going to come back. And, but he's really good as Randall. He sells the comedy in this movie when he's talking to, Elias. Is it Elias?
Yes. Elias.
Yeah. About his girlfriend and stuff. And the things Elias tells him, Randall's face absolutely sells the humor so much when he's explained to him about the pussy troll. And then he says the mouth troll, and there's the looks on Randall's face. I was rolling laughing the first time I saw this movie.
He's like mortified, but he wants him to go on and keep explaining.
It could have come. I mean, this is dialogue that could be written that's very vulgar, but it's delivered so well that it's funny. And I think it's funny because most of us have had these kind of conversations at work, whether we want to admit to it or not. You know, we've had bizarre conversations with people that we look at them like, what are they talking about? And this is how people talk. You know, people, you know, that's one thing that Kevin, I think, has always done well. And I think even Quentin Tarantino has done well with their dialogue, is they do write dialogue the way people really do talk. So it comes across very natural sometimes and not always fake. It's funny because Kevin was recently talking on his podcast about, you know, he's been writing his Mallrat sequel and his Clerk sequel, and he has to go to his daughter now to ask her how people talk because he wants to make sure the dialogue stays relative. You know,
that's funny.
As he gets older. But the pussy troll thing is really funny. That's all. It's hilarious. What was Jackie's reaction to
sometimes.
That? Yeah.
No, she thought it was funny.
That's what they're having this conversation about ass to mouth, and Becky just walks in and she just answers it so chill. You know, just like, what a cool boss, right?
She's like, sometimes you can go ass to mouth. It is appropriate to go ass to mouth.
Just to hear Rosario say those things.
It's like, I feel like you're in that moment with Dante when she's in the roof and when she's on the roof and she's just staring at him, you know, through her hair and, you know, just, you know, the music helps with the scene. I feel like there's like some really, really good shots in here. Not shots, but like the way the scenes play out, I think it's really good. The acting and the directing and song choice.
Yeah, you can tell it's one of those movies where Kevin's heart was really in it. You know, he really cared. And then we haven't even gotten to, you know, the whole thing is Dante is moving to Florida to marry this girl. And Randall, you know, he's dealing with it. He's kind of upset that his best friend's going to move away. So he wants to have a party for him, a last go house. He wants to hire this Kinky Kelly, which at this point in the film, you know, we don't know what Kinky Kelly is. Till we realize when he gets to the end of the film, it's a bestiality show, which is really fucked up in its own right. And so this show occurs at the movies, and everyone's watching it, and it's quite interesting, so to say. But it's played for laughs mostly. There's nothing too really vulgar in it. But the police come and shut it all down, and they end up in jail together. And that's when, you know, Randall lets his heart and soul out to Dante, tell him why he's upset that he's leaving. He goes, I don't think this girl's good for you. You don't see that she's changed you, that she's planning the wedding, because she doesn't let Dante think for himself. She even makes a comment in the movie one time. Oh, that's cute. You're thinking, you know, stop doing that. And Randall is as vulgar as he is and as rude as he is. He also sees the truth in people. And he tells Dante, hey man, you don't even see what's going on, man. This girl's changed you. You're not caring about our friendship anymore. You just want to throw that all away just for some girl that, you know, gives you a piece of ass. And it helps Dante see the light at the end of the film, you know, and realize that it's all not right. And that's why Clerks 2 has a lot of heart to it. It's about relationships. And he tells me, you know, Becky's right there throwing herself at you right in front of you every day. You don't even notice it, Dante. And at the end of the film, Randall ends up becoming the voice of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, he really does. And I like how he just, like, you know, this get fucked attitude that he has. I think it's awesome. He's like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm trolling this guy in the wheelchair, talking about how us people who can walk should be grateful. And, you know, it's he's in a fucking wheelchair. Fuck yourself, you know? Yeah, I called him Crippy Boy. And Dante's like, how heartless you are. And I'm like, I was like, man, I kind of see both sides of this. And I was like, you know, it's like, it's not your place to tell people, you know, to lecture people on this, but also he's, you know, trying to find an outlet and, you know, maybe Randall shouldn't call him Crippy Boy. I was like, but right. It's all hilarious, you know?
Yeah, no, it really is. And it's hilarious because the redeeming factor at the end of the movie, showing that Randall really does care about people and everything. And,
yeah.
And Crippy Boy. And then his Lord, and let's not forget his Lord of the Rings triad.
One ring to rule them all.
Which was taken almost verbatim from Kevin Smith talking about the Lord of the Rings in one of his specials. And they reused that dialogue in this. And he basically tells Elias set. Man, Lord of the Rings sucks, man. There's only one trilogy, and it's not the Lord, you know, it's Star Wars. And tells him the whole thing about the only way that thing would end if, what does he say, that Sam and them all took a brick in the mouth? It's like, God damn, Randall.
Oh, yeah. He's like at the end of this, at the end of Return of the King, he's like, I was just waiting for Sam to run up and tell all the hobbits to get out of the room so that he can bend over and, or lean over and blow Frodo, and Frodo could unleash that brick in his mouth, you know, blah. And he hurls. Apparently that was something Kevin Smith said on the panel. I thought that was, that blew me away. I was like, wow, really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's pretty funny. and they're not wrong always, but you know, I mean,
yeah, yeah.
I enjoy Lord of the Rings films, but if you think about them, we might do those by the end of the year since it's the anniversary, but, they are a bit pretentious at times. You think, like, man, he wrote this whole story that could have probably been resolved a lot easier. But yeah, that's a whole.
We definitely need to do the first one. I'd say we definitely need to do the first one.
So at the heart of this movie is just Randall, man. He just owns it, and then Jay and Silent Bob are just kind of there for comic relief for most of this film. But yeah, man, I think overall that I really enjoy Clerks 2 a lot. I think it's one of Kevin's better films. You know, I don't know. It's hard to say what his best is. I mean, you could argue it's Clerks or Chasing Amy, but Clerks 2 is right up there with those two as one of his better films. And, you know, he's done some movies that were purely for the fans.
I like Dogma.
Strike Back. Yeah, Dogma's good too. And, you know, Dogma's just, I think Dogma, what holds it back sometimes is it doesn't quite fit with the other movies in the same way, because it's kind of got a like otherworldly story to it with the angels and all that, but I still like it. And it doesn't help that it's not easily available out there. The Blu-ray's out of print and very expensive. The DVD is starting to shoot up in price. And that's all Kevin's talked about that on his podcast before. It's out of his control. It's like, you know, it's up to the studio to want to reprint the Blu-ray or give him the rights so he can do it himself. He's even told people before, don't go buy $70 copies of Dogma. He goes, just wait. Eventually it'll get released in some way. And he's right. Those things always do.
Bootleg time.
Bootleg.
I have it on DVD. I never did buy the Blu-ray. Yeah, I do have the DVD.
Copy. Yeah.
But overall, I think Clerks 2 is solid. I give this movie an A. I think it's a good film. It's funny. It's heartwarming. It's a well-written comedy drama, so to speak, and truly hilarious in a lot of ways. And, you know, y'all give me a hard time about not liking comedy, but this is one movie that really makes me laugh.
What would you score it?
B+.
Yeah.
B+. Definitely.
I would go with a minus, but I'll rewatch it again. There's some aspects of it that I don't know. It's still a great and funny movie. But Mark, you hit up on all the major points of it, and the dialogue is snappy. I really like the way Kevin Smith writes his dialogue, and it's very natural sounding, very witty, and very, as you said, like, yeah, he's not wrong, you know, but it's funny as hell. So,
yeah. And, I enjoy these characters, man. I think it's a cool universe he's created. You know, Kevin's in his films and his podcasting has definitely been an influence on me. You know, I read one of his books. You know, I've bought Kevin Funko Pops and definitely a fan. You know, got to meet him very briefly a few years ago at a comic store here in Houston, and that was a cool moment to get to meet him and take a picture of him with him. So, you know, I appreciate what he's done, and I'm looking forward to Clerks 3 and Twilight of the Mallrats. It looks like Clerks 3 is going to shoot first, and I guess they don't have everything to get. I thought they were going to do Mallrats 2 first, but from recently talking, I guess Twilight of the Mallrats isn't quite ready to go yet. So I guess we're in Clerks 3 first. It feels like Twilight of the Mallrats should have came out first, but we'll see. But do we really need a Mallrats sequel? I don't know. I enjoy Mallrats, but maybe, I don't need a sequel to it.
Yeah, maybe if he feels like, you know, he wants another go at it. You know, I know he regrets. Well, he said he regretted it, and then he took it back. And
well, yeah, because fans came around to it. Like, I guess we've gotten Brody cameos in Jay and Silent Bob and stuff, but maybe we need a conclusion of Brody's story. So maybe we could use some Mallrats for that reason. You know. So that brings us to our top five this week. And Kevin has created this universe of characters that he calls the View Askew Universe, and he's given us a lot of different characters over the years. And so we thought we would talk about our five favorite View Askew characters from all of his films. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I managed to get a list done in time for once. Aren't you proud of me?
All right.
Good job. Acknowledge me.
Good job.
Not Dan.
My number five is Veronica from Clerks 1, because I wish I was there when she was doing her thing.
Wasn't that you in the bathroom?
No, Veronica was, accused of giving 37 low jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Dante's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Dante's girlfriend.
Yeah. So that's my number five character.
I guess I'll go next so Mark can go last. I'm going to go with Jay, because I like, you know, he's definitely in my top five. I like him more in some movies than others. Sometimes I'm like, I feel like he's too much in this scene. And in some movies I think, you know, he's just perfect all along through, but for me, it's Jay, number five.
I have a number five. I have Silent Bob. And I'm separating him obviously from the director. I just think Silent Bob is the glue that holds some of these things together, especially when he gives advice in Chasing Amy, where he straightens Jay up and Jay and Silent Bob strike back, where, you know, what is the scene where he shouts at him, it says, what's on the back of the car, you know? You know, without Silent Bob, you know, he doesn't keep Jay in line a lot of times. And he's really funny. You know, like I say, if you watch Kevin's facial expressions, some really funny moments throughout these movies.
Number four is Mark Hamill as the cock knocker.
Oh, man.
Silent Bob.
I almost did that.
That was a funny character.
And he gets his hand cut off.
Yeah.
This wasn't in the script.
I usually pick characters that left a pretty pretty large impression on me. So.
Right.
But I also like Brody from Mallrats. No. I could kind of relate to his slacker lifestyle.
Oh, yeah.
Gen X, man.
I've got Bob at number four. Same thing, Mark, you know, he's the voice of reason, and he always gets the cool gadgets. He gets the bat grappling gun. He gets a friggin' bong lightsaber, you know, that cool stuff. And he's
didn't he arm himself with a cock knocker too?
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah.
Number four, Mark.
Number four, I have Brody. I just think that when I saw Mallrats back in the day, like, man, I was kind of Brody, man. You know, I read comics and thought I was cooler than I really was, even though I didn't have the hot girlfriend like him. You know, I guess I really related to him when I first saw Mallrats, and then he went on to own a comic store in Jay and Bob and Strike Back, you know, I think Brody was a funny character and I always wanted to see more of him. Jason Lee did really good in the role. I liked his conversation with Stan Lee and Mallrats. And Brody, man, I want, you know, bring him back for Mallrats too.
Number three. It's kind of a gray area for me, but I went with Alan Rickman's character, Metatron from Dogma. He just adds a lot of gravitas
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry,
this role. And he's so funny the way he delivers his lines too at some of the funny moments. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Metatron from Dogma is my number three.
Number three for me, I've got Randall, because he just he's especially strong in this movie. And I feel like he, you know, he's a really good person to bounce off the inside jokes and the banter that and little sidebar jokes that pop off between him and Dante and other characters he interacts with. I think he's responsible for a lot of comedy within the universe. So, Randall.
Number three, and I know she was only in this film so far. We'll get her in Clerks 3. It's Becky. She's made an impression on me in this film. Just as her character just seems like a sweet, genuine person who, but she also can talk shit with the best of them amongst the guys, and she's cute, and I just, out of all the movies he's made, her character always has stood out to me in Clerks 2. I think Rosario did such a great job as Becky, and that's a tough one to put her above all the characters Kevin's created, man, but it's just, she stood out to me in this film. I think it's because Becky's the girlfriend that every guy wants. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's nerdy. She's sexy. She's vulgar. Man, let's just be honest. We all want a girl like that.
Yeah. My number two is actually Becky. She's the every girl that us nerdy guys will ever want. The significant other.
For number two, I've got Renee. And that's probably highly influenced because I really liked, her in Charmed, and she was a 90210. It's kind of, but she also, gets it on in the elevator, which is cool. So hooray for chicks that get it on in the elevator.
Right. we're at number two, right? Randall at number two. I think Randall just has some of the funniest lines in Clerks and Clerks 2. Jeff Anderson is really, really good as Randall. You know, it's like I could never imagine. And I can see why Kevin didn't want to make Clerks 3 with someone else in the role, just because other than anyone else this role was written for, and he's great in it. And he's just genuinely funny. You know, he might be wrong in his funniness sometimes by calling the guy Crippy Boy, but he's funny. So, Crippy Boy.
My number one character is actually Silent Bob. I kind of see him more. I just like his silent comedy, and it's kind of to me a throwback to Harpo from the Marx Brothers movies. And Harpo was kind of like that silent character that relied on visual comedy and gags and gimmicks. And I don't know, that's where I kind of picked up on where Silent Bob character came from. So, and then, you know, I always enjoy seeing Silent Bob in all of those movies. He's my favorite character because I always want to see what he's doing, you know, as a just there stealing a scene without doing much talking. So number one is Silent Bob for me.
Number one, it's Becky, man. It's Becky, dude. She's one of the guys. She's cool. And, you know, and she likes nerds, you know? So, you know, boom. She's a keeper.
I can't help but have number one is Jay, man. I just, there's not a character, not the selling drug stuff, but there's not a character in Jay and Silent Bob that I just don't relate to more. I mean, I have always been in my friendships, and you guys know this, I'm the Jay of the friendships. I'm going to tell you some fucked up shit and tell you how it is. And sometimes I might be an asshole to you, but sometimes I might make you laugh. And you guys know that about me.
You're more of a Randall. You're more of a Dante, though. No, I'm joking. Nah. that would be Frank. You work in retail. You're always bitching and complaining about milkmaids. No.
That would be Frank. Frank complained to me today about Frank sent me a text today complaining about something in grocery. So Frank is definitely Dante.
Yeah.
Dante.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, Jay, man, I mean, dude, he's just cool. And then I got to meet Jason Mewes once too. And he was a really, really cool guy. You know, and when Kevin says Jay's not playing a character, he's playing himself on screen. It is true. Jason is just like that in real life. I spent a solid 30 minutes with him at Compalooza several years ago, sitting in an interview session that he did with Justin and Carrie over at Metal Geeks and just chatted with him. And he's just like that in real life. So it's cool. So that's our top five USQ characters. And there's so many great ones that we didn't even put on these lists. I mean, from Hopper in Chasing Amy to Holden, McNeil and Banky. And there's just a lot. I mean, Kevin's written some great characters over the years that have been embedded into our pop culture through his films with more to come, hopefully, you know. So good stuff, man. I will continue to talk about Kevin Smith on the podcast as long as I'm allowed to, because the guy is heavily influenced for me. And in fact, this week, watching Clerks and getting ready for the show, I went on eBay and I grabbed cheap DVD copies of his two Evening with Kevin Smith specials, which I've seen them before, but I was like, you know what? I want to own these. You can't get them on Blu-ray, man. So yeah, I picked up like $3 or $4 each on DVD off of eBay. I was like, you know, I'm going to grab these so I have them. So I can nice. Rewatch them. And I want to go back and watch the one where he said that he did that Lord of the Rings dialogue in his special. I was like, I don't remember that. So I'm going to have to go back and watch it. So cool stuff. So let's do a little bit of news. There's really not much at all. We have a Batgirl cast, Leslie Grace. Is that how you say it? I don't even know who this is. I don't know. I'm not familiar with her, but she's cute. She looks like she can be tough. So I guess DC is moving forward with this Batgirl movie that no one asked for. But, you know, nowadays things are about, you know, girl power type movies and things like that. So I guess, you know, they're trying to make a Batgirl movie. I don't know.
I've heard about this for several years.
And, you know, I'm to the point with DC that, like, I don't know what their plan is anymore. I'm not sure what they're doing. All I know is I enjoyed the Snyder Cut. I enjoyed Aquaman and Wonder Woman. And you know, Suicide Squad looks interesting. The Batman looks fantastic. So I guess I'm to the point where I'm not trying to figure out what their plan is. I'm just going to try to enjoy the movies. But, you know, so we'll see where they go with Batgirl, you know. Who's directing it? Did they ever say?
No.
I didn't see.
Yeah. Mm-mm. So, yeah. I know Whedon was attached to it at one point before he became a creep. So who knows? So we'll see. But yeah. Other than that, the only other news that really hit this week, we got a new trailer for Dune.
That looks good.
I have no cat in the bag in this. I've never read Dune, so I'm not attached to whether it's just like the novel or not. I have seen the David Lynch film, and I found it kind of boring. But I've heard from people that are Dune fans that said, well, the David Lynch film was cut to pieces because they were trying to fit it into 2 hours, and Lynch didn't really understand the books, and he made it real serious. And what I was sold on the new trailer was, in a 3-minute trailer, we got more humor than we got in the entire David Lynch film. You know, because there were some scenes in there that were a little bit humorous and a little bit dramatic. And overall, man, I think it looks
quite beautifully epic. Shot.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it looks fantastic. A fucking awesome cast: Josh Brolin, Oscar Isaac, Zendaya, Dave Bautista, Jason Momoa. I mean, Timothy, who's playing Paul Atreides? I can't say that guy's last name. But, I mean, just an incredible cast.
Timothy Chalamet or something.
Chalamet, yeah, it's hard to say his last
name. Chalamet.
He's won an Oscar, and he's gotten a lot of acclaim. It looks really neat.
We also got a glance of Baron Harkonnen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then and the Sandworm. And a lot of rumor is that it's only the first half of the book. You know, because it's a long book and they're not trying not to squeeze it all into one film. So, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. But no, I think they already shot the second half along with it.
Did they? I wasn't sure about that.
Like it was a back to back shoot, I think.
Kind of like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
We'll see. But, it looks interesting. You know, I'll probably watch it on HBO Max because that's convenient nowadays instead of going to theaters. But that's okay. You know, I'm kind of,
yeah,
I kind of like the movie.
You don't have to pay $30 for it.
Right. Yeah. I kind of, you know, enjoyed, you know, doing it like that. So we'll see. That's really all the news. Oh, the only other news is this came out right before we recorded. Matt, you're a Dragon Ball guy, but they announced the name of the next Dragon Ball film, which we knew it was coming in 2020. It's Dragon Ball Super Superhero.
Yeah.
It's like, what? It's a lot of supers.
Dragon Ball Super Superhero?
Yeah, that's what
they're
calling it. Dragon Ball Super Superhero. And they released a little brief like logo teaser trailer. It doesn't really show anything, just announces the title. But that was announced at San Diego Comic-Con at home today. So Dragon Ball fans have that to look forward to next year. I have a feeling I will be in a theater with my son watching it. I'm sure he'll want to go see it. And that's okay. I'll go watch it with him. I joke about it. I'm just not as hardcore as you guys, but I've seen some episodes, and I've seen all three of the Dragon Ball movies with the kids, so I've seen some of it.
I don't watch Dragon Ball.
I just can't always keep up quite with everything that's going on in that universe, but I've watched enough to kind of know what's going on in some of it, so we'll see.
But that's going to include a time skip.
Let's preview next week's film before we get out of here. Movie that Log has been bugging me to watch for like 3 months now. Or it feels that way. I'm just messing with you. It's the prelude movie to my birthday week movie, which I don't know exactly what it's going to be yet. But next week, we're going to go back and talk a little sci-fi comedy from, I guess it was late 80s or mid 80s, starring Dennis Quaid and Martin Short, and that is Inner Space.
Test pilot Tuck Pendleton wants to make history. Supermarket clerk Jack Putter needs a vacation.
Jack, sorry, Jack, you're late. That's not good. You know it's coupon day.
Lieutenant Pendleton is about to be miniaturized, placed into this needle, and then injected into this rabbit.
Rock and roll.
But something went wrong, and Tuck's about to get a new destination. Inside Jack Putter.
I'm not a man.
Hello, can you hear me?
I'm possessed!
Now, Jack's got twice the problems.
How you doing, Jack?
But he's double the man. With Tuck on his side.
Can you more accounts?
In his gut. And on his case.
You're not gonna bag groceries all your life, are you, Jack?
And only 24 hours left for Jack to get out of danger. So that Tuck can get out of Jack. Dennis Quaid, Martin Short. Give yourself a shot of adventure. Inner Space.
I've watched this a long time ago. It's been a while since I've seen it, so I don't really remember a lot about it. I know it's streaming on HBO Max if you people want to watch along with us next week. So that's next week's show. I don't really know what else to say about it. I got to rewatch it. It's been years since I've seen it.
Matt, have you seen it before?
No. I know it. Didn't it win an Oscar or something, or it almost won. It was Oscar nominated, or
visual effects, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I actually can't wait to look forward to your opinion, Matt, on it. So
this will be my first time viewing.
I've always 1987. It came out, and I've always enjoyed Dennis Quaid's work, and being that he's a Houstonian and stuff, you know, I've always liked his movies. So it'd be, you know,
he's from Houston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dennis Quaid's originally
from Houston. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Not Quaid.
So, yeah. So, next week on the show, we will talk Inner Space. But that's it for this week, though. As always, just stay safe and go to RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. And look for that Comic Palooza special episode here soon, as long as the audio came out good. If it didn't, well, fuck, you're just not going to get it soon. But until next time, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the existential crisis clerk.
Remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Just go there and do it.